This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 52, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And please check out my other podcast, it's called the Past Lives Podcast, and it looks into evidence of the afterlife. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. This week I'm talking to Philip Kinsella about his book, Sky Crash Throughout Time, UFOs, the Reptilian Man, and Strange Mysteries Surrounding Rendlesham. Philip is an author, a UFO researcher, and abduction experiencer. He is a psychic medium and clairvoyant. He hosts a radio show with his twin on the Paranormal UK radio network, and it's called Twin Souls, and that's broadcast monthly. Well, hi, Philip. Thanks a lot for coming back to the podcast.
Hello, Simon, and thank you very much for having me on again.
So we're going to talk about the book. It's called Sky Crash Throughout Time, UFOs, the Reptilian Man, and Strange Mysteries Surrounding Rendlesham. People who listen to UFO podcasts probably know about that Rendlesham incident, but this book's about a lot more than that, isn't it?
Yes, primarily the book is centered around a lot of UFO activity previous to the very famous 1980 event that happened in the Rendlesham Forest and certainly at Bentwaters, the base for the American military. The Deputy Base Commander, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt, was there. And over a three-night period, as the world knows, and very famous within the British Roswell, they call it, the military had encountered something very strange and bizarre. So when I did team up with Brenda Butler, and there are some synchronicities with regards to that, because I didn't know where Brenda Butler was in the world, when I started to investigate the Rendlesham Forest incident, myself personally, the area that is, the area of high strangeness due to another researcher, I never would have believed that I would end up co-authoring a book with one of the main investigators, Brenda Butler, who had been the original author with Dot Street and British ufologist Jenny Randalls with their book, Sky Crash, A Cosmic Conspiracy, which was published back in 1984 by Neville Spearman Limited, Publishing Limited. So, you know, and I still recall, Simon, that I was a young lad, and I remembered when the story broke in the national newspapers, and I was reading the front of this newspaper telling this story that military men had encountered. At that point, the press thought it was aliens and UFOs at a military base. I mean, you know, and then, of course, you find yourself, you know, getting involved to a degree with that area. So, yes, it was quite an interesting journey.
And can you tell us about Brenda Butler? Because she did quite extensive research, didn't she? She wasn't just doing a little bit here and there.
Oh, no. Brenda Butler was the original investigator. And of course, as most people don't know, is that before the incident happened at Rendlesham, 1980, within the December period over three nights, Brenda was very, on good levels with all of the military at the base there. You know, they used to have song and dances and, you know, and she knew them all because she used to run a paranormal kind of like group. And she'd have a lot of the Americans talking to her and befriend her. And so she actually then, when the events unfolded with Jim Peniston, John Burroughs, and Colonel Charles Holt and his men, she decided that she wanted to get to the bottom of this and start asking questions. And of course, Brenda, along with her good friend Dot Street, decided that they would co-author a book together. And Dot, of course, was linked with the Bufora Network. And of course, Jenny Randalls was one of the key figures within Bufora, got wind of this and wanted to assist within the writing of their first book, which was kind of like a tell-all book. Obviously, Sky Crash, A Cosmic Conspiracy. And this is where things started to develop with regards to their involvement. And Brenda has researched that area for many, many years. In fact, you know, she's known as the guardian of the forest because of her extensive research into levels of high strangeness. And she has to be credited with going into the forest, well, almost nightly. She doesn't as much now, but, you know, going out and investigating, taking groups of people around. So, you know, she was the one who actually started the ball rolling with regards to the revelations that the military tried to bury regarding, you know, Rendlesham Forest.
Did she find locals who had seen something over those nights and people who were not military but maybe lived in a farmhouse close by or something?
Yes, she did. But the local farmer that this is very interesting because his farm is located within Capel Green, and he doesn't talk to many people. And he says that he saw nothing when the events occurred. Other locals had seen strange lights. One of them, a dog walker, had seen some very strange activity within the forest that scared him and his dog. So Brenda had gone round to, you know, ask around for to see if there was anyone that was within close vicinity of the area when the UFOs had appeared over the three-night period. And, you know, it because it's scattered, I mean, you know, I've done my research there for about 10 years. And because it's quite scattered, it's quite limited in terms of, like, the forest. So, you know, if people are seeing things when, you know, they're at a certain distance, all they'll see perhaps is lights, you know, without, you know, you have, when you go through the forest, it's quite thick and huge, it's vast. But yeah, she did get most of the locals involved. And, you know, that was very interesting with regards to her trying to get to the bottom of this. But most of the time, I think she found it very difficult, very hard, because as with any UFO case or any celebrated UFO case that eventually becomes myth and legend, you get a lot of other people that, you know, add their part, and then someone else adds something, and then it becomes, you know, very difficult to ascertain what is fact and what is fiction. And I think that's true of any UFO case. But primarily, Brenda did find it very difficult to get to the bottom of what had occurred. There were rumors that there was a satellite that had come down, or pieces of a satellite had broken away. Even, you know, something to do with a Russian submarine or, you know, SAS playing pranks on the American military to get back at them. You know, and the list goes on. But from our understanding, something truly extraordinary did happen. That is fact.
And there was the interview with, is it Mr. Gladstone, who said he saw men covering what looked like a crashed missile?
Yes, that's right, or something. Now, that is an area that we still find quite puzzling. You know, this is where the controversy leads when people assume that, well, it was a satellite or parts to a satellite that crashed, or some kind of secret weapon that was being covered. And they were wearing uniforms because they thought perhaps that it was contaminated with radiation. So we just don't know. All we have is the testimony of Colonel Charles Holt, and he is very steadfast in his approach to what occurred to him and his men, and he will not budge. And also with Jim Peniston and John Burroughs. Now, what we also understand, and I have come to conclude, is that with any UFO case, when this phenomena, this singularity presents itself to a group or one person, it seems to unite with them on a very personal level of psychic connection. And it could be possible that what one person is seeing is completely different from the other person because due to conscious translation. But, you know, as I said, Sky Crash throughout time was more of an investigation with regards to the UFO scene before and afterwards. And of course, we had to relay some elements of the 1980 event in there. When Sky Crash Throughout Time was originally published, because that book that's been reprinted and it's been updated, when it had originally been published by Capelbaum Publishing Limited in 2013, we had to change the subtitle in this new one because everyone that bought it thought that it was a record of the famous 1980 event at Rendlesham. And of course, it wasn't. It was kind of like a semi-autobiographical book about Brenda and her work. And of course, our research is in there as well too. And of course, boy, did we kind of like get a little bit attacked by that. People are attacking the book, you know, not seeing it as worthy. which is quite sad, really, because when you have been out there yourself personally and you have investigated this area and you have had your experiences, it changes everything. So I understand and respect opinions, that's fine. But it's a very different story when you're in the nest of the activity, so to speak. And it was a hard book to write, let me tell you. It's very hard to put together because even I found some incredible information in there. Peter Robbins was in England, and of course, we were met at a UFO group, and he informed us that we had to go. When I mean me, I mean my identical twin brother Ronald and good friend Susan had to go to the forest because we struck a really warm friendship with Peter. And we thought, let's go and have a look. Let's go and check it out. And it's roughly a 2-hour journey from Bedford to Suffolk. So, you know, and it is smack on 2 hours. So we went there, and that's where we started to explore the forest, the certain locations of where the original UFO or UFOs, because one of them split into three parts, had been around. And you can also forget the suggestion that most researchers assume that it was nothing less than the lights to the Orfordness Lighthouse, which is no longer there. Let me tell you, that is impossible because we saw those sweeping beings and they were very, very weak. And I always joke, Simon, and say that if, you know, the American military or indeed our own military are chasing the lights to a lighthouse, then God help all of us. It's a foregone conclusion, isn't it?
Yeah. When I heard that, I did think this is absurd. If those guys work there for weeks and months and years and these guards are on the gates like all the time, yes, during the night, they'll be very used to seeing the lights like that every night.
Yes. And also, you know, the experimentation that we performed there was incredible, which I'll get to in a little bit later. But in terms of the book, Sky Crash Throughout Time, Brenda actually allowed me into her manuscript that she had written called Life on the Move. And of course, we couldn't have the book called that title because it sounds more like a travel book. So we had to change the title to something that was more appealing. But she had some very interesting experiences throughout her life, not just within the period of 1980 when she was, researching with Dot Street and Jenny Randalls, but also with a so-called reptilian man. As incredible as that may sound, and I remembered feeling, oh dear, you know, how are people going to take this? But yeah, when I started to interview and find all of the emails and correspondences from top ufologists that had written to Brenda or been writing to one another in terms of this very strange being that had nothing to do with the original 1980 event, that was very bizarre. And in another bizarre twist of fate, I am absolutely certain that encountered this extraterrestrial long before I had got involved with Rendlesham. And that was all due to a minibus that we all took with a UFO group to the forest for a night sky watch. And we were in a pub, just, you know, getting something to eat and something warm to drink before we went into the forest. And this man was in there that was very strange. And Ronnie and Susan said they saw his arm change to plastic and return back again. I didn't see it, but I believe them, because, you know, they're very grounded and we always have been. And this guy followed us and it felt like he was getting into our mind, you know, very bizarre. And then when we took the journey back with this UFO group just to a sky watch, every single person in that bus was talking about this man whose name he used then was Joseph. Of course, earlier he was known as David Daniels. And interviewing most of the people I could get hold of categorically proved to me that whatever this person or alien was seemed to connect with some very high members within not just the UFO department, but also in Parliament and governmental positions. And of course, we understand at that point that, you know, most people will not believe it. But I always say, you know, before you, you know, make an assumption of something, before you say, no, can't be possible, look into it. That's what we do. Because I had the same thought when I first got involved with this. And also, Simon, I'll tell you, I was actually privileged to hold that Brenda had some very strange material. Now, from a UFO. And this had been collected by Brenda and Dot after Colonel Charles Holt's meeting, or shall we say encounter, with a huge UFO that seemed to be lit very brightly and dripping some kind of residue onto the ground. And this honeycombed, very lightweight material that I was holding was from that object. And the material itself was very light. It was puckered with hundreds and hundreds of holes, and it had this kind of like strange coloring to it. And you couldn't cut it. That was the other thing. So I was very privileged to have been able to hold that, to actually, you know, look at that as well. So we did spend a long time trying to go through Brenda's original manuscript, Life on the Move, and trying to pull out all the best bits or the best cases that we could to, you know, show the public that, okay, so Rendlesham 1980 event, Suffolk, it's called Britain's Roswell, was not the only event. There had been a lot of strange activity before and afterwards. And I wondered whether or not, you know, the area was a bit like Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, or certainly in Bempton, where Paul Sinclair, good friend he is, does a lot of his research out there. You'll find that these areas that have UFO activity also promote high strangeness, not just UFOs or aliens, as we call them, but also Black Panthers, you know, cryptids, ghosts, this type of thing.
I wanted to ask you about Brenda, because in the book it talks about how when she was young, she fell off a bus and she was in a coma, but she had some weird visions.
Yes, that's right. She did indeed. And she also had a UFO encounter outside their home, because they lived in the country. And, you know, Brenda's very much, you know, into the farmland and all that type of thing. She's very grounded. She's very clever. She's very sharp. You know, people tend to, you know, put people in boxes, but she's very sharp and she's very careful who she lets in. Because you have to win her trust. But she had an experience, and so too also did her father with a UFO. And when Brenda had seen this craft on one occasion, and her father indeed had an experience, and we know within the book that it can't be proven, but Brenda assumes that his encounter had somehow led to his very early passing. And so much so that this UFO had left kind of like big holes in the ground. The police had got involved as well. But when Brenda had been a child, she'd, you know, fallen off, bus hit her head, and then was found herself in this kind of like strange state where she was able to see spirits and aliens. She called them aliens, and even seeing a UFO outside their back garden. And, you know, so I think and feel that with all of us, Simon, to a degree, there are certain levels of synchronicity which occurs. I don't think it's just a case of, oh, look, you know, someone's seen a UFO and that's it. Normally, when someone sees a UFO and you start investigating into their claims, you'll find that they would also have had a lot of psychic activity within their lives, paranormal activity, and obviously other experiences with what we call UFOs. So, you know, I think that all of us are kind of like key elements to this very strange activity. And I think and feel that with Brenda, certainly it felt like destiny was about to play within her life, although she probably wasn't aware of it, where all of what she understood and knew on a paranormal level and UFO level was put to the test and challenge when she got involved with this UFO sighting and UFO encounters with the American military. I mean, you couldn't get it any closer than that, could you, really?
Yeah.
She was right on the doorstep, wasn't she?
Yeah. I think it says in the book when she was 12 years old, she saw greys, alien greys.
Yes, that's right. Yes, she did see them. And of course, she, you know, she's stated to me that she still has experiences with them. Of course, my idea of the Greys and Brenda's ideas of the Greys are two different things altogether. But we have to be very open and honourable and accepting of other people's understanding of what they're dealing with. Yes, and of course the forest itself, you know, is very strange. I mean, when you go there, there are certain locations where you sometimes see orbs. We had some very weird experiences where Brenda took us in daylight one time, and it was warm weather, and through the forest, and there wasn't any trees overhanging. We were just walking along this road. And she said, you know, sometimes we get stones, hot stones falling from the sky. Well, my idea with that is that that is some kind of poltergeist activity. And no sooner had she said that when there were these heavy sounds like stones being dropped on the floor. And sure enough, a stone fell quite a way in front of us and hit the ground. I saw it come down. She said to me, Brenda said, pick it up. She said, pick that up. She said, you'll find it's hot. And I did, and I picked it up, and it was hot, which was really amazing indeed. So again, you know, when people say, oh, well, you know, Rendlesham Forest is only about the American military's encounter with, you know, strange objects. No, it wasn't. There were other times when people had witnessed UFOs activity before and afterwards. And again, people categorize the subject into boxes, don't they? They say UFOs is here and aliens are there, and then we've got cryptids there, and they kind of separate them. But my understanding is that there may be some, you know, connections with regards to these anomalous activities. And certainly with the research that I've been doing for a very long time, many years before I got involved in Rendlesham, you know, with regards to interdimensional activity or this type of, you know, portals or energies that come in and around us. So, yes, it is very interesting.
Because it talks about Foo Fighters being seen over Bentwaters in 1947.
That's right. Yes, that's right. So, you know, Foo Fighters were seen during the war, as we all know. And, you know, the way that I understand it is that they could possibly be some form of eye or scouts that is sending information back to perhaps a main source that does not want to come down too close to the area or, you know, or maintain some distance while these probes go in and take a look themselves. So, you know, although most people will also state, you know, that, oh, you know, the whole thing was because the SAS wanted to get back at the Americans as some kind of prank where they filled helium balloons with helium and put flashing lights on them. Well, no one found any of these helium balloons with flashing lights on them any more than anyone, you know, states that it was the Orfordness Lighthouse. And a lot of the people that have stated that hadn't been out there to see that. You know, so it's all very well sitting back and saying, well, I believe it's this or I believe it's that. When you're doing your field investigations, it changes a lot of things, you know?
And there's an idea that the UFOs, if they wanted to, they could get through that forest in darkness. They don't have to light themselves up. So it was almost like they were showing themselves to the Americans. They wanted to be seen.
Yes, well, a light activity is very interesting. And if we take terminology with regards to psychic mediums, psychic mediums see lights, sometimes different colored lights, which are smaller. And as we understand, those lights or energies or whatever they are believed to be the consciousness of the individuals that are connecting through to the medium or linking through to their loved one. Now, UFOs come in the form of lights, which are much larger. You know, the UFOs could come in without having to use lights to see where they're going, but I don't think that they're lights to kind of like guide themselves around. I think it's their energy. And, you know, like a moth caught to the candle flame, the glare of a candle flame, once these lights come in, once they present themselves to the individual in whatever form, and we are talking about UFOs here, there is some kind of connection, an alteration within the psyche of the individual. And where this force, this energy seems to come in or permeates their neurological processing. So I think there's a number of things that's occurring when the UFOs come in. They kind of displace the time and space around them. And a lot of occasions you'll find that if the individual is around the object for a period of time, there is some kind of personal integration from whatever intelligence is behind the what we call UFO. And if we go back to Jim Peniston's experience of that strange device that he saw, Peniston and Burroughs and had been alerted to what they thought was a plane crash in the forest. They went out there. And as everyone knows very famously, that Peniston was the one who saw the kind of like triangular object, very not too large, but hovering some way off the ground, not too far off the ground, pitch black. And then it started to light up with strange symbols. And it's when he touched the object, he started to get a series of binary downloads, and he found himself starting to become sluggish. Burroughs, you know, has a different take on that, and as many others do. And you see, I think that what happens is when this singularity gets into the nest of us, when it gets so close to us, it changes us individually. I think that's the way I understand that.
And there's something that can be manipulated by the greys in a way, because we hear about screen memories and how they can do missing time, and just seems like they just take your memory away if they want to.
Yes, well, I have a theory on that, and that was published back in 1996 in Alien Encounters magazine. It was called an article about the greys called Spirits in a Material World. I think in some instances, theoretically speaking, you know, although it can't be proven because people tell you what they are, I can't. I'm open to all forms of speculation, literally. But it could be possible that these beings known as the greys are in fact mimicking some kind of near-death experience. And if you look at a near-death experience, when someone dies and they cross over into a tunnel of light in more cases than not, and they meet loved ones where communication is administered through telepathy, and if their body, their physical body, is diseased or ailing that they've left behind, once the person who's completed their near-death experience and comes back into the body, sometimes there's a correction within the structure of the you know, the body itself, where they become healed. Now, in an abduction with the greys, my understanding is that it's possible the greys are taking the real essence of you away from your body temporarily, still attached, of course, through the you know, the link between mind, body, and soul. They're taking the body into their field frequency of awareness, and the interaction is then made possible. Communication is done through telepathy. But interestingly, with a near-death experience, more times than not, the person will recall their enlightening journey. In an abduction, it's almost as if it's forgotten. They can't remember it. And I think because the greys could perhaps forcibly remove the real essence of the individual, the soul, the astral self, into their domain, and while the person is within their domain, there is no way for consciousness to be recorded, you know, and it's been forcibly done by the greys, where consciousness is outside of its normal locale of time and space. So I think that perhaps that, you know, whatever these greys are, you know, we've never physically seen one. There's a lot of dubious films and pictures on YouTube, you know, very dubious in nature. But a lot of the times you'll find that these specters operate almost as if they're ghosts. They come in and they go out very quickly. So my idea on them is that's a different story altogether with regards to the abduction phenomena, UFOs itself, and how it's been kind of like pigeonholed and boxed. Like UFOs are here, as I said before, and aliens here. I think there are common denominators which may pinpoint us to certain elements of what we may be dealing with. And I think this is something that the system we serve will find very difficult to inform the general public. And this is probably why disclosure hasn't yet occurred. It's quite complex.
Yeah, it gets very complex. And it's one of those.
Oh, yes.
It's one of those things you think, well, I can investigate this and find out what's going on. And I've heard people say that. I've interviewed people who've kind of said, oh, I found out about this UFO thing. I'll tell you what, I'll just take a week and work it all out. And then 5-10 years later, they're still trying to work it out.
No, we have no answers. And I still have a blank page like many other good researchers out there in the world. you know, we still do not know what we're dealing with. And, you know, one, we have to create some type of theoretical model. At least I have tried, and I'm still trying, like many other researchers, to try and see where things could be connected on some level. But the phenomena eludes us. And I think that that is the reason why it's so supremely confident that we won't find out what is behind it, what really ignites the energy and where they come from. So, you know, people say outer space. Well, we're understanding that space, it's quite inhospitable. I'm sorry, I'll just say that again. Space is quite hazardous. I can't get the word out. Yeah. Space is quite hazardous to any biological form of life. So my understanding is that these specters may be coming through some other way. And of course, we have to be open to the, you know, other theories, us from the future, AI technology from another world, interdimensionals, demons, dare I mention that word? Because if you mention that word, it doesn't go down too well, unfortunately. But we have to be open to all forms of speculation. I think also the biggest difficulty we have is trying, because the phenomena operates on a purely mental level. I mean, I'm not just talking about the visual, you know, tracking of UFOs on radar or the capturing of them on films or photographic equipment. You know, it doesn't seem to have, there's no way of reaching out to this singularity and saying, right, I can hold this. This is what this is. We have nothing. Unless, of course, the military establishments have something that they haven't shown us yet. We don't know.
And you're talking about pictures and what have you. And I've heard of the times people have seen UFOs and they might have their phone with them. Or back in the olden days, they might have had their film camera with them. But it just didn't occur to them to try and take a picture of it.
No, and that happened to us. Yeah. That happened to us on the 9th of April, 2016, at precisely 11:15 p.m. at night here in Kempston. It's another well-documented UFO case that I've been researching and finding more witnesses. We've been presented with three massive circular white crafts that were silent in a triangular position over our house here when we were coming back from some police friends from an early birthday meal. And I had my mobile phone in my man bag. And it was buzzing. It was my niece trying to get hold of me to tell me that she'd clocked them. She'd film them on her phone while they're on their way. But I thought, no, I'm not going to pick the phone out, because I thought if I do pick my phone out, take my attention away from them, they'd be gone. So it is very strange. And people will tell you, well, you should have done this and you should have done that. But it's very different when you're in the activity when it's occurring. Yes, but I agree with you. Absolutely. It's almost as if the phenomena, I'm not saying that I felt in any way that when we viewed those three UFOs, that it was, you know, stopping me from picking up my phone. It just felt like the right thing for me to do. So that's another very valid point, Simon. Could it be that the phenomena, knowingly or unknowingly, suspends the individual to the point where they're caught in this wonderment or, you know, in some cases, horror? And there's nothing much they can do about it, or what they would think they would normally do, they won't do. So that is a very valid point, absolutely.
So can we talk about David Daniels? Because I've got a few questions about him.
Yeah, sure.
One of them is the description that I read is that I think he had blonde hair and blue eyes, and he wore a really long leather coat that was down to his ankles.
That's right.
And that he always appeared to be immaculate. But the people around him said he never seemed to wash or change his clothes.
No, that's absolutely true. Yes, he kept the same appearance throughout. And what happened was that to begin with, Brenda Butler had a call from her friend Dot Street, frantic call, telling her that she had to get to her house as soon as possible because she had this strange man that she didn't like. She called him an alien and he suddenly appeared in her house. He was, you know, knocked on the door. And the next thing she knew was that he was standing in her living room. And David Daniels had asked where Brenda Butler was. Now, it seems strange that David Daniels had found where Dot Street lived, but didn't know where Brenda was. And Brenda said, well, it's too far for me to come. And Dot begged her. So Brenda got in her car and drove, I think it was probably about 35, 40 minute journey. It's not just down the road. And she was immediately presented by this very tall, I suppose for a male, a handsome guy, a crew cut haircut, blonde hair, you know, immaculate, wearing a long leather jacket that came down to his ankles. And he seemed pleasant, but Dot was not wanting of him there. She wanted him to go. And of course, there was a lot of, you know, harsh talk between Brenda and Dot. And Brenda then decided to go with David Daniels and go for a walk with him and to find out more about him. And incredibly, I mean, Brenda would talk to anyone. I mean, she's a very lovely person. And they went for a long walk and he told her that he was from another planet and he had nothing to do with the Rendlesham case whatsoever. And Brenda went along with it. He seemed articulate and intelligent. And when they went back into Dot's house after their very long walk, they'd gone for about an hour, Dot went absolutely crazy. And David Daniels went upstairs to one of the bedrooms and, you know, and then Brenda went up there to go and check to see if he was all right. And what David Daniels did then was that he said for her to close the door and that he would present himself in his true image of what he really represented. And that's what he did. And of course, Brenda saw him turn into what she called or assumed was a reptilian. And after that, he had these sweets. He needed energy. So these sweets were something apparently to kind of like bring back his energy because he'd used much of it to show his true form. So yes, I mean, and it didn't end there. So Brenda decided that it would be a good idea for David Daniels to stay with her. And of course, at that time, Brenda had a partner, Chris Pennington, and they had a caravan out the front of their house. And of course, it had a bed and very, very few amenities, had no bathroom or anything in it. So he stayed in there. But no, he never washed. He never went to the toilet. No one saw him eating any food other than sweets. And on one occasion, Brenda's partner, Chris, was shocked to find, they both found that all of the paintwork from the caravan had started to peel off as though whoever was inside, which was, of course, David Daniels, was emanating a great deal of heat, which started to affect the surface of the caravan. And of course, you know, Chris, Brenda's partner, didn't like him. He scared him. He could read minds. David Daniel could read minds. He even gave Chris a book and said to him, right, flick through the, give me this book, he said, and I'll read it. So Chris was handed the book. Then Chris handed the book back to David Daniels. David Daniels flicked through the book very quickly, a huge volume, passed it back to Chris and said, right, choose a page and I'll read it. I'll recite what I remembered from it. So he did. Chris chose a page and David Daniels would read word for word what was in that. And of course, this scared Chris greatly because he knew he was dealing with someone or something that was not human. So Chris then decided that because he didn't like David Daniels, he secreted a gun under his pillow because he was that scared of him. So this was the beginning of this very strange connection with David Daniels. And not just with Brenda, who, you know, considered him a good friend, because David Daniels also showed Brenda a lot of, said that this is how UFOs use the ley lines within the world to get from A to B. So, yes, he was quite a scary, scary character. A lot of the locals didn't like him. They thought he was very strange.
And he had a meeting with Lord Hill Norton?
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did. Well, what was discovered was that Brenda was asked by David Daniels if she would go to London with him because he wanted to go and see Lord Admiral Hill Norton. And everyone knows that he was very much interested in ufology. And incredibly, Brenda went with him to go and see the Lord. Brenda was security checked before she went in. The only thing she had was a copy of Sky Crash, A Cosmic Conspiracy, and David Daniels was not searched. They were asked to go in to see the Lord. And of course, the meeting occurred where David Daniels started to, you know, speak to the Lord and tell him that, you know, he was an extraterrestrial, that his people were in danger, their world was dying, they needed help. And Lord Hill Norton said, well, there's nothing I can do. My hands are tied. I'm close to retirement. And Brenda's sitting there looking at both of these men discussing these certain facts. Quite unbelievable that Admiral Lord Hill Norton was accepting of it. When Brenda passed her a copy of her book across to the table to Lord Hill Norton, he passed it back and said, if that's got anything to do with the Americans, I want nothing to do with it. And of course, that ended the meeting, you see. But then, of course, what happened was that David Daniels started to go after other ufologists. He was looking for other ufologists. So it could be apparent that he could read minds and that whomever he met, he could get what he wanted to know and then move on to someone else. At least that's my theory of it. Because he did make a visit to Jenny Randall's. She thought he was crazy. And he also then started to connect with other ufologists, some in America as well too. But what was interesting was that David Daniels had also befriended Ralph Noyes, who used to be head of the Ministry of Defence here in England, or certainly high up position within that department of investigations. And they struck up a kind of friendship, although I think that Ralph Noyes only saw him a few times. And I've seen the letters, the emails. And what David Daniels did was to prove to Ralph Noyes who he was. And he took Ralph onto a bridge in London, not far from a television studio, raised his arms up into the sky, and there appeared three white objects, silent, spherical, and in a triangular position. And incredible. And of course, as you probably well know, that Ralph Noyes wrote a science fiction book, which I have, called A Secret Prophet, which was kind of loosely based around the dealings with Rendlesham and, you know, his version in a fictitious sort of way of what he believed may have been going on.
And didn't this guy, David Daniels, turn up at the prison? Was it Colonel Wendell Stevens was in prison and he turned up dressed as a priest?
That's right. Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, when he was serving some time in prison, David Daniels then presented himself, got into the prison as Father Daniels. And of course, Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens was a very clued up man. He kind of like sniffed a rat because he didn't really know what Father Daniels wanted for him, only that he felt there was something not right about him. So it feels to me, and he did make several visits to him, and he proved himself that he was an extraterrestrial through, you know, reading the Colonel's mind. So once again, we ask, you know, what was David Daniels after? What was he looking for? And why did he present himself in such bizarre and strange ways to most of these very high up and prominent individuals within the UFO society? We don't know, but we do know that Scotland Yard wanted him, as well as the FBI. And there was another UFO researcher, you know, someone quite high up, who told me in no uncertain terms that David Daniels, now, wasn't that an interesting case? And said no more about it. And of course, you know, we just have to, you know, go along with the flow to see if anything else will come up. This is why I'm absolutely convinced that we had seen him years later and he used the name Joseph. His description, I guess, would kind of match David Daniels, but there was no photographs of him. There was no pictures taken of him. Actually, there was one, and it was in Australia where he was last seen. But when the people tried to take the picture of him, David Daniels and the female, the picture just came out in a blur, like light. They weren't seen on the picture. So we don't know whether or not Scotland Yard did get to him or the FBI did get to him, or whether or not he is still here, or, dare I say, gone back home. We don't know.
And it gets a bit more bizarre for me, because there was the Avely UFO case, and he met someone who was involved with that case, and they had an instant dislike.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, totally. Where David Daniels had met someone else who'd been involved with the Avery case. And, oh, my goodness, I mean, sparks flew. I mean, you know, thank goodness that Brenda was there to try and sort it all out. But very bizarre, isn't it, when you think about it? I mean, it's almost as if, you know, the way that they kind of shape this in UFO circuits is like, you know, it's an isolated case. But with David Daniels, you know, he's talking about soul incarnations and about, you know, souls existing on other planets and being on a different timelines. So when you look at this, it's like going deeper down into the rabbit hole. But it actually happened. This is fact. You know, it's not fiction. And these reports had come from these individuals where these situations had occurred. And David Daniels was an enigma, I can tell you. He's left a lot of people still scratching their heads, not just the UFO phenomena, but also about his intentions and why he did what he did, what he was after. I mean, he'd bury things like books, his maps he would bury, and then want them back. A very strange character indeed. Wasn't interested at all in food or, you know, those other things that most humans are interested in. It's almost as if I think he was using one researcher to read their mind to get to another one. We don't know what he was looking for, what information he was gaining, but I can assure you that every single person that met him felt that there was some kind of unpleasantness to his conscious mind.
And was there a couple of other people that showed up as well that claimed to be working with him and they were from the same place?
Yes, absolutely, yes. There was a couple of females that presented themselves apparently or allegedly they were with the same task force or command that David Daniels was linked with. And, you know, but it all got very messy at the end because David Daniels, apparently Scotland Yard wanted him. And Brenda Butler had the calls come through from Scotland Yard and she denied anything. Of course she would, because they knew, they must have known that he'd been around her and that he'd been framed for this murder, but there was no murder announced. The murder was supposed to have been committed in London, but nothing was said about it. So, you know, I think they tried to dupe Brenda to scare her into giving the authorities the whereabouts of David Daniels because he went undercover. And David Daniels knew that he was being sought off by, higher officials, as it were. So I think that's probably why he took off.
I wanted to ask you about Colonel Holt, because you said that you had dinner with him. He seemed like a completely straight-up guy to you.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, David Young, a good friend of ours, he organised a conference in Suffolk. And Colonel Charles Holt did his talk there, and I can assure you his talk was absolutely second to none. That gentleman will tell you exactly how it happened, and he still cannot get his head round it. He believes that it was something not from here. Yes, and then we had a meal. We all had a meal with him after the talk. An exemplary gentleman. Very grounded, you know, you couldn't meet a more honourable gentleman than that. But of course, you've got to understand that at that time, when they had their event occur, he was in a very precarious position because, as most people know, that one of these objects that they had witnessed had been firing beams down the weapons storage unit. And of course, most people wasn't to be aware that the base of Bentwaters or Woodbridge had any weapons there. So that is why I think the authorities stepped up, came in soon after the initial experience that the men had. And the Office of Special Investigations then came in and spoke to all of those that were involved with the UFO activity. I know that there's been suggestions of some quite nefarious activity occurring, you know, some people being subdued and drugged to be told that it was this or it was that. But you'll find, like any other UFO case, it comes with these incredible allegations that kind of like, you know, you can't believe, but I'm sure it did happen.
And the tape that Colonel Holt made on the night is really fascinating. And I listened to it again today because you can just go on YouTube, can't you, and find it almost immediately.
Yes. Yes. And I believe that that tape is genuine. You know, I believe that most people say, no, it was all fabricated. And, you know, but this is where any UFO investigational case gets really sloppy and all over the place because too many people start to get involved and add their pennies worth in there. Yes, there are people who lie, and there have been people who've lied surrounding Rendlesham. We're not going to go into detail. There's people who fabricate things just because they want the piece of the pie. But when you discover the original testimony of those involved, that changes everything. And I can attest to the fact that whatever occurred at Rendlesham, the area is very strange. It's weird. And it's not because we went in there with the mindset thinking, oh, you know, this is a weird place, things are going to happen. Things did happen for us as well, too, and quite incredibly so, which we documented within Skycrash itself.
Brenda had a meeting with Colonel Holt, didn't she? And he described the UFO to her?
Oh, Brenda had more than one meeting. I mean, I think there was a lot of banter between the two of them. But Colonel Charles Holt was not going to tell Brenda exactly what he knew at all. And there are quite a number of funny examples of what occurred between Brenda and Dot Street. I mean, you know, they were nearly sent to prison at the base because when they went into one meeting, Colonel Charles Holt really assumed that they were recording the conversation. And he had this little box in his desk that was flashing that told him that, you know, one of them had a recording device. But, you know, what Colonel Charles Holt now states is that, you know, and has, you know, come forward for a long time, I think, in stating that whatever occurred was something that he cannot explain. It was powerful, real. And, you know, no matter how many times people try and say it was this or that, he was there with his men. He saw what he saw. And you're talking about, you know, a lieutenant colonel, you know, someone who's very high up in the chain of command within any military infrastructure. So you would know that what he would say is right, you know?
And he wrote quite a big book about it all, didn't he? And I thought it was interesting because I heard he went to his bosses. I think he was retired after he wrote the book, but he went back to the military and said, can I get clearance to release this book? And they said, yeah, no problem. UFOs, don't worry about it.
Yeah. And he teamed up, Colonel Charles Holt teamed up with John Hansen, another top, well-respected ufologist and author of many volumes of the history of ufology. And of course, he connected with John, and this is where most of his work came out. So, yes, I did see a lot of that as well, too. But he's a charming gentleman, a lovely man, and very gracious. But I can assure anyone out there listening, he's as sharp as a knife and, you know, will tell you it as it was. He doesn't add or subtract anything with regards to his testimony whatsoever.
In the Rendlesham area, then, what other types of what we might call paranormal activity is there? Do people ever report seeing, I don't know, apparitions or
yes.
Cryptids? Is it like just ongoing? Does it still happen now? Do people still see UFOs today?
Well, apparently, yes, from what I've heard. But when we did our research there in the 90s going into 2000, a number of strange things occurred there. One of them was truly spectacular, and one of them was not. We'd been walking down towards the base of Bentwaters, where the gates are, a long walk. It's a very long, lonely walk, because the base is apparently or allegedly deserted now. And Susan, Ronald and myself walking down there, and there's this sound. It was like something very heavy and organic that seemed like it had slammed down on the ground not far from where we were standing. And of course, you know, that put the heavy the willies up me. We started to move away because we thought that is really odd. There's also sometimes rumbling that comes from beneath the ground, And another occasion that we'd gone there, we had set up base camp not far from Capel Green and on the edge of one part of the forest where the farmer's field was. And we put our blanket out. And, you know, during this time I did smoke. And I thought, well, I'll go off and have a smoke, you know. And the other two came along. And when we went back 20 minutes later, someone had left a dead rat and a dead rabbit on the blanket, fresh, in a position, in a circle, with the nose to tail, both of them in a circle. So we knew someone had been there and placed them there, and it was not very nice. So we kind of like decided, well, we better not hang around there. We didn't hear anyone, we didn't see anyone, but, you know, but why would someone do that? And also an experiment we performed on the 8th of June, 1998, which occurred at 10:15 p.m. at night, categorically proved that perhaps this intelligence or this force can connect in with human consciousness, because we saw a UFO, a pyramid-shaped UFO with a gap and a circular undercarriage with a bank of blue lights around it, the top half moving one way, the bottom half moving the other. That was something I will never forget in my life. And that was hovering above some trees. And some people have said, well, you know, I'm sure that the military were performing some kind of holographic projection. Why would they waste their money, time, and resources on three relatively unimportant individuals, to the military at least, to try and make us believe that what we're seeing is a UFO from another world or dimension or whatever? No, it didn't make any sense, but it proved something to me. It proved to me that it's possible that within these geographical locations of high strangeness, that the phenomena is able to connect with us or link in with us and thus present themselves in the way that we know how to translate them. And I can assure you that that pyramid shape object, along with the circular undercarriage, was seen by myself, my brother, and Susan. And when I started to run towards it, I was calling back, stating, tell me that it's a pyramid, tell me that it has a circular undercarriage. I was wanting to confirm that what I was seeing was the same as what they were seeing. And no, we didn't have any recording equipment with us. But there again, I wasn't, you know, out there to prove it to the world. It was more of a personal thing.
So can you tell us about your other stuff that you do with UFOs, books, and website?
Yes, there's a website my twin brother and I have. It's www.thekinsellatwins.com. I've written a number of UFO books. Sky Crash is the newly released one that's been reprinted and dispressed. And also the book You, the Public Deceived, the Grand UFO Deception. I also wrote one called A Passage Through Eternity, The Enigma of the Dead, UFOs and Aliens. And I have just completed a new UFO book. It is finished. I won't give the title away just yet, but it is due out next year from Philip Mentel's Flying Disc Press. And that is all about the Greys, a little bit about cryptids, and trying to put a few more dots together with regards to the research of that.
Well, it's been great having you back on the podcast. Thanks a lot for coming and talking about the book.
Thank you very much, Simon. I'm very honoured indeed. Thank you.
And that was an interview with Philip Kinsella about his book, Sky Crash Throughout Time, UFOs, the Reptilian Man, and Strange Mysteries Surrounding Rendlesham. And if you want to hear the rest of this fascinating interview, you'll need to sign up to Patreon for the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $4.50 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $7.50 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Past Lives Podcast. There are over 240 episodes. And on the Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence of the afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. I also release an extra episode of the Past Lives Podcast every Thursday, and that's called Paranormal Stories. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. My Instagram is Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.